Are you struggling to lose weight during menopause? I'm teaching a free live masterclass sharing how I dropped 30 pounds and got rid of all of my menopause symptoms without dieting, taking the shot, or buying expensive supplements. I used three science-based strategies, and I'm going to share them with you so you can stop struggling and feel fantastic over 40. My dietitians and I have helped thousands of women thrive through menopause, and we want to help you. Register for free at ithastobeme.com/masterclass. We are talking about reproductive health with Dr. Sophia Yen today, and I am so excited for you to hear what she has to say because she is making women's lives easier and healthier by revolutionizing access to birth control and menopause care for women in the United States. There's a huge gap in awareness and education about birth control and menopause treatment options, and often a lack of access to contraception for teenagers and women of childbearing age, and a lot of disinformation about hormone replacement and menopause treatment options for women over 40. Science evolves constantly, and what we know about our bodies changes. And many of us are making decisions about our health based on outdated or inaccurate information, or working with doctors and practitioners who are just not trained in menopause and don't have the skills to support us at this phase of life. So Dr. Sophia has made it her mission to empower women of all ages with the most up-to-date scientific information and options. She's a graduate of MIT, UCSF, and Berkeley. She currently serves as a clinical professor at Stanford Medical School and serves on the board of multiple organizations. And she's the co-founder of two amazing nonprofits, the Silver Ribbon Campaign to Trust Women and SheHeroes.org. And her company, Pandia Health, is changing the game in women's health. They offer affordable telehealth, prescription fulfillment, medicine delivery for recurring birth control, and menopause care. She is so passionate about preventing unplanned pregnancies and educating women about birth control and their menopause treatments. And what she has to share about the science behind making periods optional to prevent cancer will blow your mind. And how to use birth control in perimenopause to reduce your menopause symptoms and transition with ease. Every woman needs this information. So let's get the skinny from Dr. Sophia Yen. When was the last time you said, "It has to be me"? You know, that feeling where you know in your gut, this is what I want to do, and you just go for it. Welcome to It Has to Be Me. I'm Tess Masters, and I'm getting the skinny from people who are smashing their fears and doubts to go from dreaming to doing. Let's dive in, get fired up, and go after your next. It has to be me. Oh, Dr. Sophia, I am so excited to have this conversation. Thank you so much for the work that you do to empower women. And so I want to start with that It Has to Be Me moment for you where you decided to be a doctor. Do you have a medical family?
So the main push to be a physician, I think, is growing up as an Asian American. Your options are doctor, engineer, or something else. And I love people and I love science and I love the ability to use that science to help people. So that's why I became a doctor.
And so once you decided that you were going to go into medicine, what was the next It Has to Be Me where you decided to become a pediatrician and then you were interested in, you know, helping adolescents? How did that sort of flow for you where you made that your specialty?
I think when I started exploring what, you know, specialty I wanted to go into, I was, you know, pre-med and high school volunteering for Planned Parenthood so I could put that on my resume and get some, you know, expertise in medicine, see how what it was like to be in a clinic. And I was in charge of running pregnancy tests. So I ran a pregnancy test and it wasn't for me, but it could have been for me, but it wasn't. And unfortunately, it was for another 15-year-old. I was 15. I was running for it for 15-year-old. And it came back positive. And I was like, oh, this is going to be such a different path. Because I knew we always ask before we run the test, what are you going to do? Are you going to continue the pregnancy, put it up for adoption, or terminate the pregnancy? Because we want you to do it before you're all freaked out and jacked up, you know, when you're rational. And she's like, I'm going to keep it. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a different road for her. You know, being a teenage pregnant high school student, what are the odds you're going to graduate high school, college, higher education? And certainly women have done it, and kudos to them, but it's so much harder. And it was just two different paths. I was going to head off to MIT, UCSF Medical School, Children's Oakland, back to UCSF to specialize in teenagers, and then do a master's in public health at Berkeley, and then finally clinical associate professor at Stanford, and then open a startup. What path was she going to take? And realizing that we as a society, had we given her comprehensive sex ed, had we given her a goal to aim for, where like me, I was like, I'm sexually active, but I cannot afford to get pregnant. I need to be on condoms plus birth control because I need to get through high school, med school, you know, all that schooling to get where I need to go. And then if we'd given her confidential reproductive health care, what a different path her life could have been. And so always drawn to reproductive health, reproductive rights. Also for personally, if I were to get pregnant because the condom popped or the birth control failed, I better have the right to decide what happens in my body, you know?
Yes.
It's a really towards reproductive health. And then in med school, I realized not so good at anatomy, not so good at surgery, but really enjoyed talking about birth control, enjoyed doing pap smears, sexually transmitted infections. And I found adolescent medicine, where we can catch young people before they develop their habits and be like, only about 30% of women have an orgasm in any heterosexual encounter. If you're not getting off, then don't risk pregnancy and sexually transmitted infections, right? So better communication. And also, you can have sex, but please don't get pregnant or sexually transmitted infections. And this is the good birth control. This is how you prevent it.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many initiatives that you founded to empower young girls. Besides the giving them access to the birth control and the education, like, where do you see is the real starting point when you talked about changing behaviors or kind of setting, you know, empowering young girls on a path to be making better choices? Where do you see that beginning? You know, what are some of the things that we can do, you know, as parents, as role models, you know, outside of the medical field to be part of this movement that you're part of?
Exactly as you said. Later, I was drawn in by my sorority sister at MIT to co-found SheHeroes.org. And the idea of that was, when you Google woman physicist, you want to find a woman physicist talking excitedly about her work and her job. And they've shown that, you know, young people start trimming their trees of possibility of what you could be when you grow up, starting as young as third grade. So our videos target third graders and up to show them that women can be whatever we want to be, whatever we work hard towards. Certainly there will be obstacles in the way, but, and certainly there's many of us that have done it without seeing that exact person, but it helps if you see it, then you yeah. are more likely to believe that you can be it. And again, as I alluded to, if a young person has an aspiration and they know to get there, you cannot afford to be pregnant. Either you don't have sex, or if you have sex, please use a condom and some really good birth control, you know, and that it's in your interest to fight for your right to reproductive health. Encourage your parents to vote that way. So it's telling the young person that you can do whatever you want to be when you grow up, but you got to work hard, and that, you know, make sure you don't get pregnant until you get there. I told my daughters, don't get pregnant until you have a job with insurance and a partner, because it's so much easier that way than if you don't have a job, you don't have insurance, you don't have a partner. It's already hard enough with two people, let alone one people.
Yeah. I loved what you said about trimming the tree of possibility in your life. So what was the seed for She Heroes? Were you ever encouraged to trim your tree, so to speak, or who encouraged you to think about watering a bigger tree?
So I think that even for me, my parents had always said, you know, my mom was a nurse and she said, don't be a nurse, be a doctor, because the nurses do all the scut work and the doctors get the credit. And I'm like, okay, I get that. But it was exposing me to all the opportunities. My parents were very good at that. My mom let me try everything. And I tell parents, the best thing you can do for your young woman growing up is, one, you're gorgeous, and two, you can achieve anything you work hard towards. So not the fixed mindset, but the growth mindset. And the beautiful part is, the example I give is, I was like, I want to be a model. And my mom, and I want to go to modeling school. And if you saw my pictures back then, glasses, buck teeth, horrible hair, the what I call Taiwan clothing from back in the day, which was like cowboy boots when they were not fashionable, a gaucho purple skirt, like gold, just colors that were horrifying. And if my daughter presented to me, is like, I want to go to modeling school, I'd be like, no, darling, no. But my mom was like, sure, go do it. And so every time I pursued a man, if he rejected me, I'd be like, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm gorgeous. I went to modeling school. You know what I mean? And that confidence.
Yes.
I tell people, if you can put in your young people that confidence, it gives them so much power. And another example I give is, I had a cousin, and he had come from Taiwan to the United States. He had such confidence. And I was like, nah, buddy, no, no, you know, no. But by senior year, he came like freshman year of high school. By senior year, he was class president. And so if you believe it, it can be done, and it's a lot easier. My parents instilled in me the confidence enough for three people. And you can see it when I talk, when I pitch, wherever I go. My dad was like, if a teacher teaches you something and you don't get it, it's not you, it's a teacher. Find a different teacher, find three different textbooks, find somebody else on YouTube teaching it, because you are brilliant, you can learn it. The teacher just doesn't teach well. And so find some other teachers. And that gave me a lot of strength.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the teacher in you, where you claimed that in yourself. So you went from studying medicine to then teaching it. What was that "it has to be me" moment for you?
So the teaching part, I think, is part of medicine. We have a phrase, see one, do one, teach one. Yeah. And that's what we do with everything. Surgery, with putting in an IV, with diagnosing an EKG, you know, procedures, see one, do one, teach one. But the reason that I got into teaching was because I wanted to make a bigger impact. And that is kind of what's driven me, right? Being a physician, I make a one-on-one impact. Being a professor at a medical school, I get to train a whole bunch of future doctors. This is the way it should be done. This is the future. And they also keep me good. And like, Dr. Yun, the latest paper says this. Why are you talking about this? And I'm like, oh, I better look up on the latest paper, you know. And the research keeps you on cutting edge. And then I realized, if I opened a company, I could affect the entire nation.
Yeah. Part of the movement.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that "it has to be me" where you went, I'm going to start Pandia Health.
Yes. So I was giving a talk to a bunch of physicians. Why don't women take their birth control? And one of the top reasons was, didn't have it in their hand, didn't have time to run to the pharmacy every single month. And in the United States, we have these pharmacy benefits managers, which are an oligopoly of evil. And they're like, most women, we run out of our birth control on Sunday. So we're good. We go the Sunday before so that we can get it. But that is technically 8 days before. And the insurance is like, sorry, not going to cover it. You have to come back tomorrow. And you're like, but I just waited in line for 20, 40 minutes to get to the head of the pharmacy for you to tell me that you're not going to cover this. And tomorrow I have a meeting. I have children to pick up. I have things to do. I can't come back tomorrow, please. Nope, sorry. And so my friend and I were like, we can solve this with technology. We will poke the insurance company, like, can I fill it yet? Can I fill it yet? And then when we can fill as much as possible, and then ship it to the woman. And then a lot of women forget to make that appointment because you have to renew the prescription once a year. So 2 months before it runs out, we're like, please go see your prescriber. 1 month, please go see your prescriber. 1 week, please go see your prescriber. And then we ran ads, free birth control delivery. 60% of those that responded did not have a prescription. And I'm like, don't you know in the United States, you need a prescription for the birth control pill, patch, ring? And me being a physician, I could write a prescription. And thus Pandia Health was born. We can write the prescription if you need it, or we can just deliver it.
Yeah. So talk me through how I would use the Pandia Health service.
So if you're using us for birth control or for menopause, you go to our website, you sign up. We ask you all the health questions that are related to birth control or menopause. Our birth control protocol is a protocol that the state of California approved for pharmacists to prescribe birth control. And then we added a layer of doctor because our doctors have things that they want to ask on top of there. And then depending on how you answer, then it branches to, you know, more and more questions. We ask you to submit a picture of your government issued ID and a photo to prove that you are who you are, the front and back of your insurance if you need it. The main thing we need is a blood pressure within the past 365 days. So if you've been in an office or if you can go to a pharmacy or use grandma or grandpa or your mom or dad's blood pressure cuff and just get that done. Or my favorite option is you can go to the fire station, but make sure you calm your heart down because some of those fire station people are pretty hot. So take a deep breath, sit calmly for 5 minutes, have them take your blood pressure because they'll do that as a public service because most of them are EMTs. And they do it for old people, so why not for young people that need to get their birth control? And then give us that number. We make sure it's all safe. Our doctor then looks at it. If there's any concerns, they'll message you to ask some follow-up questions, but usually we ask all the questions in our questionnaire. And if good, writes the prescription, we bill it to your insurance thanks to the Affordable Care Act. No copay, no deductible for any FDA-approved birth control, aka free if you have insurance. If you don't have insurance, it's roughly $15 to $17 a pack, so less, about 50 cents a day if you don't have insurance for the birth control pill. And we charge $35 once a year to use our expert physicians. That's for birth control. For menopause.
And what does that look like, the $35 to use your expert physicians?
Yeah. So that is that consultation because, you know, seeing a physician, if you were to see me at Stanford, it might be $750 an hour, but you're getting me for $35. And then we have unlimited follow-up questions about birth control, but only birth control because you only paid $35.
And is that for any state in America?
So
I could get online and it could be sent anywhere?
So the thing is, there are serious regulations on physicians, on telemedicine, and on pharmacy. So our physicians, we are licensed in 15 of the states, and you have to have a practice and all this other stuff. And the 15 states covers 70% of the United States. And then we encourage birth control tourism. So if you are going through one of our 15 states, and we chose the big states, but also the states that a lot of people visit. So New York, if you're going to Texas, South by Southwest, if you're going to Las Vegas, all of Nevada, if you're going to LA, if you're going to San Francisco, if you're going to Georgia, Illinois, Michigan, any of our 15 states, and you're like, I'm in JFK right now, I'm in SFO right now, fill out that questionnaire. Pay the money and say, I am in California, New York, Florida, one of the 15 states. Then our doctor in that state legally can write the prescription and then we can ship it to all 50 states. And we just need you to get back to one of those states once a year.
Wow. Or
as we get more funding, then we can spread to more states.
Okay. Wow. This is so incredible. So you started with birth control. How did it then expand into the menopause service?
So menopause, one was that we were noticing there were a bunch of 50-year-olds using us for birth control. And we're like, come on, is this really for birth control? I think you might be menopause, but the average age of menopause is 52. So 2 years of still needing birth control. And then generally they recommend 1 year more of birth control beyond menopause. And there's people that are plus or minus 3 years there. So we're like, I think you might be using us for hormone replacement therapy. And then I hit menopause and all my friends are like, menopause. And I'm like, yes, I will find the best treatment for me because I need to know what it is. And then I will share it with all of you. And then in building our team, we're 100% physicians, 22 physicians, but two of them are the OG of menopause, 20 plus years experience treating menopause. And I was like, when we launch menopause, you are leading the team. You are training all of us. All of our doctors will consult you. And so now we have 7 Menopause Society certified practitioners. And there's only 3,000 in all of North America for the million women each year that are entering menopause. So we are expert care. and we turn around birth control in one business day. For menopause, we do 3 to 5 in case if you're not one of the 7 MSCPs and you have any question on your training or follow-up, you can consult our 2 OGs and be like, hey, I was thinking this, what do you think? And then we send it to the patient.
So are all the 22 physicians women? Is it really important to you that it's mostly women, or how does that work?
We want people that are passionate about reproductive health. And yeah. So these are people that I've, secured via our reproductive health contacts, people that support abortion rights, people that support birth control, people that are sensitive to menopause, because so many women are told, oh, that's just old age, or suck it up, it will pass, or they just aren't educated on it. Back in my day, the treatment for menopause was you put your hand on her shoulder and you go, this will pass. And so I thought it was a day,
but I think a lot of doctors are still doing that.
They are. And so now we know that 70% of women will have hot flashes or night sweats. And on average, it lasts 7 years. Would you put your hand on a dude's shoulder and be like, erectile dysfunction, 7 years, go with that, or hot flashes for 7, would a dude suck it up? No, but women are like, okay. And so my hashtag is hashtag stop sucking it up. But we do have two male providers.
Oh, I love that hashtag.
Yes. Anything horrible with your periods, painful, stuff like that, don't suck it up. If they tell you it's nothing, go to a different physician. Go to a better physician. Go to an academic physician. Because I just had a colleague, a friend, had a horrible experience with endometriosis. And she was having sex with a very loving partner, and every time it felt like stabbing pain, and she told the physician, and she said, is it supposed to be this way? And they're like, you need to use more lube. And they use so much lube, and she's like, it's not lube, we use a lot of lube. And they're like, yeah, you just need more lube. Turns out she has endometriosis. Of course, every time you poke that, that's gonna hurt, and so she didn't unfortunately, and on the menopause side too. So as I was saying, we do have two men, but one of them is like OG OB-GYN, he knows his stuff. And the other one is just a young, learning, so supportive, menopause, he's great. No one complains.
Male doctors are amazing. We just want them to be educated in this stuff, right? Which is, of course, the kinds of people that you are hiring. So are all of these physicians in different states? Like you said, you've got a doctor that can write a prescription in any of these 15 states. So was it really important to you to get diversity, across the United States, that they weren't just doctors in California or doctors in New York or,
We have diversity in both race, ethnicity, and language, and in geographic location. Though I'd say language-wise, we're English, but we also hablamos español. And when I was CEO, I was like, I'll take any other CEO on and a Spanish off, because I'm pretty sure I'm the only CEO co-founder of a birth control menopause company that speaks pretty fluent Spanish.
Yeah, so what are some of the things that we need to know about? So let's just start with birth control, and then I want to talk about menopause as well. But with, there's all these different, options out there, or it appears that there are. So can you just simplify it for us about, what our general options are and what we should be looking for when we're coming to Pandia for our options? We do our survey and that kind of stuff. Like, just a little bit more information about that.
So first I'll start with all the birth control options, and then I'll go down to what we offer at Pandia Health.
Okay.
So starting from the top and going the way down, this is one way to quiz your doctor if they know the latest and the greatest. Ask them, what is the most effective birth control that you can give me or perform on someone? And I bet you they're not going to know. The most effective birth control is the implant, the rod that you put in your arm and sits there for 3 years. That beats vasectomy. Vasectomy is the gold standard. This rod in your arm beats vasectomy. That blows my mind every single time I say it. And then comes the hormonal IUD, which beats tubal ligation, which is the female equivalent of vasectomy. And it's not just snip, snip. It's snip, snip out an inch on each side, burn, burn. The fact that anyone can get pregnant after that is like, you are a crazy fertile woman. Your body really wanted to get pregnant because we tried to stop it as much as we can. But the hormonal IUD beats that. How does this thing that's just eluding some hormones, beat, burn, burn, you know, that situation. Wow. And then below the tubal ligation comes copper IUD. A lot of people are anti-hormone, so that's an option. But know that the two side effects of the copper IUD, more blood, sorry, the apple thing, two side effects, more blood and more cramps. So please right. know that that is different from the hormonal IUD. The hormonal IUD is actually used to treat heavy periods. So it's actually lighter with the hormonal IUD and not as much cramps or pain because you don't have this giant copper thing. Not giant, just a copper thing in your uterus. Then comes the birth control. Oh, then comes the shot. The shot is every 12 weeks. Not a fan of the shot because it gives a lot of people munchies. And then if you're on the scrawny, skinny side, it's not good for your bones. So if you're skinny, it's not good for your bones. If you're heavy, it makes you gain weight. Just like, but anything is better than pregnant. If you're pregnant, you're going to gain a lot of weight. If you're pregnant, the growing thing is going to suck off your bones and eat your calcium. So better that than pregnant. And then comes the birth control ring patch pill. And at Pandia Health, if you want the ring patch pill, that's what we're here for. Because all the other ones require you go see somebody in person to get something done. But this is what we can mail you, is the birth control ring patch pill. And then in the future, we'll have condoms. We do also have emergency contraception, and that is not the abortion pill. An abortion pill is you have a positive pregnancy test and you want to terminate that situation. That is medication abortion. But emergency contraception is... the condom popped and that was all that I was using. So I want to prevent the egg from coming out. And that's the main mechanism of emergency contraception. It's a pill, or you could also put up an IUD, but that's a separate thing. But the emergency contraception pills are a pill that you take within 5 days of contraceptive failure or, God forbid, sexual assault. And then know that the prescription emergency contraception is better than the over-the-counter one. So the prescription one is called Ella, and the over-the-counter one is Plan B, and it's generics. And it just beats Plan B at every single time point because it's a different mechanism. And again, under the Affordable Care Act, if a physician prescribes it or somebody prescribes it that legally can prescribe it, it's available with no copay, no deductible, aka free. And we really recommend getting one in advance of need. So just having it there like a fire extinguisher. So if the condom pops at 3 a.m., I want that in the person with the uterus's mouth at 3:10. No cuddling, huddling, waiting till the morning after.
Wow. So, okay, so you can get that at Pandia as well. Yes. So I know that you are very passionate, and you've got another hashtag, about this idea that we don't have to bleed every month during our cycle if we don't want to. And what is the point of that? And I don't think that the majority of women know that that's an option.
Yes. The number one pushback we get when I mention, hey, you can make hashtag periods optional. And they're like, that's blasphemy. That's not natural. And actually, what I'm here to tell you today, that it's unnatural, the number of periods that women are having today without any kind of hormonal therapy. And the reason why is Dr. Beverly Strassman, an anthropologist, studies the Dogon tribe in Mali, Africa today, not like decades ago, but today. And they die the same time that we die. So we're not comparing people who die at age 30 with people that die at age 70. We all die around age 70, plus or minus. The difference is that they have 8 pregnancies. We have 2 pregnancies. How many periods you have when you're pregnant for 9 months or 40 weeks? Zero. And then they breastfeed every 2 to 3 hours for a year to 18 months. How many periods do you have when you're breastfeeding every 2 to 3 hours for, you know, 18 months? Zero. So they have 100 periods in their lives. Whereas we only have 2 children. We only breastfeed for 0, 3, or 6. And as a pediatrician, I must say, breastfeed as much as you can, but don't have to do it more than a year, but more is better. And so that's why we over here have 350 to 400 periods versus what is natural is 100 periods. And this incessant menstruation is a new thing. For all of time, we were only having 100 periods because we were pregnant or breastfeeding. And now that we've delayed having children, now that we only have 2 children, Now that we aren't so good at breastfeeding, we are having far more periods. And every time you build that lining, it can mutate and turn into endometrial cancer. Every time you pop an egg, and we don't know if it's the popping or the healing, we think it has something to do with the tubes, you increase your risk of ovarian cancer. Another quiz for your provider. What can you give a woman of reproductive age to decrease her risk of ovarian cancer? And if they don't know the answer, they're not a good doctor. The answer is, if everybody that was born with ovaries went on the birth control pill patch or ring for 5 years, you decrease your risk of ovarian cancer by 50% because you block the eggs from popping out for 5 years. So you decrease your risk of ovarian cancer by 50%. And the longer you're on it, the lower the risk of ovarian cancer. And then lastly, by not building and popping and building and popping and building and popping every month, the colon is around there, and the colon is around the uterus, and it's sympathetic, and it's like, oh, I'm sad for you. And either it runs faster and you get diarrhea, or it runs slower and you get constipation. And anytime you mess with the intestine, you increase your risk of colon cancer. And so it's more natural to have fewer periods. And we now have the technology to mimic pregnancy with the birth control pill patch ring to block the egg popping. And then I realized the only reason those of us born with uteri bleed every month is we build that lining. And we're like, embryo? Oh, no embryo. Bleed! And then we build it up again and up and down, up and down, up and down. But if we're only trying to catch an embryo twice in our lives, why are we doing this every month from age 12 to pop out two kids and then from after to pop out two kids to there? That's like 35 years of up and down, up and down, up and down blood and random blood 1 week out of four, right? When you could just have smooth hormones and predictable bleeds when you want to have them. I personally haven't had a bleed since my last child, because I'm done with that. So I don't need to do this situation and risk random blood 1 week out of four. And in exchange, I decrease my risk of cancer. And the number one cause of anemia in a menstruating woman, menstruation. It's a bloodletting. Blood every month.
I mean, this is a radical concept to most women. You know, because we just think that it's just a natural part of life. And, you know, this is what we're taught. So I am welcoming this new perspective, even though I'm not menstruating anymore. I'm thinking, gosh, I wish I'd have spoken to you 20 years ago. But anyway, it's good that I'm speaking to you about menopause. So let's talk about that transition in your company to exclusively distributing and giving and providing access to birth control to helping women access menopause support options.
Yeah. So I think personally, you know, you've heard, I've gone on the birth control pill patch ring, skip the sugar pills. That's all you need to do, and make sure your provider gives you enough packs to do that, because that week is arbitrary. You could do it every month, every 3 months, every 6 months, or never. And it was simply because the founder was a devout Catholic that was trying to get it through the Catholic Church. Because if you could make periods regular, you could practice the abstain from fertile days method perfectly. But unfortunately, it didn't go that way. But unfortunately, he won the argument against his two co-founders. And so every method since has had that 1 week out of four withdrawal because Dr. John Rock pushed it on the other two founders. But as I was saying, I went into menopause on hormones, and so I didn't have most of the side effects of menopause. However, people who are going naturally into menopause, I like to think of it as running out of gas. It's like bleh. And so the bleh I want to go over, because about 30% of women in their perimenopausal experience will have what's called flooding. And it's what you think it is. It is a flooding of blood. It is blood.
I had that for 2 months. What? I did not stop bleeding. Oh, I bled every day. It felt like hemorrhaging.
Yes.
It was awful.
Yeah. Like, why do women tolerate this? Like, if any of my patients came to me and said, I bled like crazy for 3-5 days, I'd be like, let's shut this off.
Yeah.
Why suffer? I had a friend just like you, for a month, could not visit anybody for fear of destroying their furniture. And she told me this after. If I had met her before, I would have stopped that. You know, if you bleed more than 5 to 7 days, please see a provider. And if you are going through more than, you know, 3 to 5 pads or tampons a day, please see a provider. Because after 2 weeks of that, 3 weeks of that, you might already have anemia, cold, tired, pale, any of that. See a doctor. We have medications and science to help you with that. And so rather than this random put, plus with your hormones all whack like that, the FSH is trying to be like, give me more stuff. And the FSH being weird is what gives you the hot flashes and the night sweats. And so if we take over the system with the birth control pill patch ring and be like, she's pregnant, just calm down, then it's smooth. And then my idea is you go into menopause smooth, and around 52, we're like, are you there yet? And we come off a little bit and like, oh, okay, she's there. And then we switch you to hormonal replacement therapy.
Because- so that's what you recommend for the smoothest transition in your, you know, late, mid to late 40s, early 50s, before you're officially in menopause and you've stopped menstruating. You recommend that someone's on birth control.
On the birth control pill patcher ring. Some women do it with the IUD or the implant, and the IUD implant will take care of that whack bleeding, but it won't take care of hot flashes, night sweats, because 70% of people on the hormonal IUD or the implant still ovulate. And so it's the ovulation and the weirdness that's happening in that situation. And many women now, not many, but the ones that have educated themselves around menopause are now like, oh, I'm perimenopause and I need hormones. But you need to realize that leading up to menopause, sometimes it's too much estrogen. And if I just add estrogen, that's not going to solve the problem. What's causing it is the FSH going all sorts of whack. And the only way to calm that down is to take it over with the birth control pill patch ring. But once we know that your estrogen's all gone, then we can put it back. And also know, people are scrutinizing telemedicine and watching us and, you know, wanting to sue us and all that stuff. So we have to stick to, unfortunately, the 4 FDA indications for hormone replacement therapy. So the 4 indications are hot flashes, night sweats, genital urinary symptoms. So that's feeling like you need to pee when you don't need to pee, having recurrent urinary tract infections. And then the genital part is painful sex. I call it sandpaper sex. Dry vagina, that kind of thing. And then lastly is risk for osteoporosis. My joke is those of us that are ethnic minorities, we never get a leg up in anything, but the ethnic minorities also have 75% lactose intolerance, but that puts us instantly at risk for osteoporosis. So we instantly qualify. But if you can also throw down that your mom had osteoporosis, or if you're a small boned person, then that helps. Risk for osteoporosis. Once you get osteoporosis, then they don't do estrogen, though I personally think estrogen would help as well. But those are the 4 FDA indications for hormone replacement therapy. If you don't say one of those 4, then technically we cannot prescribe it. If you have a one-on-one doctor, your own private practice, they can go off label, but we have to stick to the rules.
And you talked about the survey that was involved with the birth control. You tell me, but the survey would have to be even more involved for somebody going through menopause, right? Yes. So what are some of the things that you're asking women to determine which of the 4 would be appropriate for them?
Yes. So for menopause, we ask them all of those symptoms and see if they have any of those symptoms. And then the other part is making sure it's safe to prescribe. The interesting thing is birth control is 10 times the strength of hormone replacement therapy. And so there are things that we cannot prescribe estrogen, progesterone at the birth control level, but we can at the hormone replacement therapy level. But the problem with hormone replacement therapy, menopause hormonal therapy, they're all using those words interchangeably now, and they all mean the same thing, is that you're older. And you have greater risk of blood clots, usually because of obesity or because the cholesterol situation, or because we've just have, you know, bad cholesterol in our arteries and stuff like that. So we will ask for some basic care, which is, have you had a mammogram? Was it normal? Ideally, have you had a colonoscopy? Though they've shown that HRT actually decreases your risk of colon cancer. So technically, we don't need to know. It's just nice to ask. And then I want to make sure people know about the book, and probably backwards, but estrogen matters. It is written by an oncologist, and it goes over the Women's Health Initiative, which scared everyone from HRT. And actually, if you pull the article that they relied on, that they produced eventually to scare people, the interval, so we do an odds ratio or a hazards ratio, and if it crosses one, it means it's no different, that the odds are the same, one and one, right? But the odds ratio was 0.8 to 1.6. So it could actually prevent breast cancer, or it could go up by 60%. But usually when you have such a large study, the confidence interval is very small. And so when it's that wide, it's not significant. But they took away HRT from two decades of women based on trending. And like, I'll go with trending when it's a small study, but when it's a big study, no, that's insignificant. And so unfortunately, yeah, it's important for people to know that the estrogen probably doesn't cause breast cancer, because there was an estrogen only branch of that study. And the women who didn't have uteruses, you don't need the progesterone. The progesterone is if you have estrogen on the uterus, and without progesterone, then you risk endometrial cancer. So these women had had hysterectomies, didn't have a uterus, just gave them estrogen. The women in that group that were estrogen only had decreased breast cancer incidence, decreased death from breast cancer. So it wasn't the HRT estrogen affecting the breast cancer. We now think it might be synthetic progesterone, which again, this was an old study back in 2006. We now use micronized bioidentical progesterone. And to my knowledge, there has not been a single case of breast cancer on the bioidentical micronized progesterone.
And, you know, this is such an important point, isn't it? That the science evolves, the knowledge evolves, the studies. And, you know, we thankfully, you know, menopause, or maybe it's just because I'm in menopause, but it's not a dirty word anymore. Women are openly sharing their stories, and there's so many more resources available from you and from so many other places. You know, what's the right time for a woman? You know, what around what age should a woman be considering HRT?
So the perimenopausal part is like 5 years before 52, so like 47, but it's like plus or minus 2 years on each side. So if you have hot flashes, night sweats, any of that stuff, you can consider going on the birth control pill patch ring. And then around 52, plus or minus 2 years, then you can check a blood level. We don't check blood levels, your doctor can, but the current state of menopause treatment is we just treat to the symptoms. And then we can add the HRT to cover the hot flashes, the night sweats, or if you don't qualify for it, then there are non-hormonal methods out there. They're pretty cool, but they aren't as effective as estrogen and ridiculously expensive because they're name
brand.
So
what are some of those?
There is something called Veoza. And then And then Fezolinient, I believe, is another one, is the medical terminology. And those are interesting because they're selective estrogen receptor modulators. And so for some of them, at the breast, they're anti-estrogen, but in the vagina, they're pro-estrogen, and they're anti, you know, that one is like that. But then one of the side effects is hot flashes. And I was like, well, that's not cool. But also know for hot flashes, you can actually use an antidepressant. And so unfortunately, some people were misdiagnosed with anxiety when actually it was menopause. So they were treated with an anti-anxiety med, but it worked for the hot flashes. And so you may be put on an antidepressant, but it's not for antidepressant. It's for the hot flashes if you can't take estrogen.
And can you get vaginal estrogen from Pandia Health?
You can get vaginal estrogen, and 50% of the women on systemic estrogen, be it a patch or a spray or a gel or a pill, are covered for the genital urinary by that, but 50% are not. And so need to add extra if, again, painful sex or recurrent urinary tract infections. And in general, people are saying that the vaginal estrogen at the lower doses does not absorb systemically. So even if you've had breast cancer, you could have vaginal estrogen for the genital urinary symptoms because it's not picked up systemically.
Thank you for bringing that point up, because there are so many women, again, who are getting misinformation about this. You know, I posted something about vaginal estrogen on social media, and there were all these women who had breast cancer saying, not if you've got breast cancer. And they were all really, you know, had been fed that outdated information, let's say. Is that the right way to put it?
Exactly. It's about keeping up with the literature. And again, it's also a risk benefit. There is no detectable level in the blood, but if that freaks you out and you have breast cancer, sure. But does not having good sex with your significant other affect your quality of life? Does having recurrent urinary tract infection, a lot of older women in elderly homes or whatever have recurrent urinary tract infections, and like, oh, that's just old age. I've learned that old age is a euphemism for menopause. And and I was like, it's menopause. It's not old age. And we have some treatment for it. We may need extra treatment in the future to like boost up our metabolism or other stuff, because estrogen, progesterone isn't the only thing going on, right?
And
the example I give of old age is a euphemism for menopause is that I transitioned into menopause, and it was quite a transition. In 1 year, my cholesterol just shot up out of the sky. And I'm actually also an obesity expert. People wait 6 months to see me, and I counsel them on diet and exercise. And then I went to see my physician, and I was like, my waist, normally I wear 99% of my wardrobe is skirts, and like the skirts didn't fit. And I was like, oh goodness. And my provider's like, oh, you need to like go see a nutritionist and exercise. And I was like, I have not changed anything from last year to this year. I counsel other people on what to eat and drink. And she's like, it's just old age. And I was like, oh, okay. And then my cholesterol went up, and she's like, oh, you need to go on a statin, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like,
oh, look, this is such a common story.
And then I put on the patch, my waist came back. And then I learned in this menopause education journey, when you take away the estrogen, the fat is distributed centrally. Where does my skirt fall? Centrally. And as an obesity expert, when I hear central obesity, visceral obesity, that means it's around your heart and it's in your liver. And I'm like, that's all sorts of death and blood clot. I don't want that. So if taking away the estrogen does that, put the estrogen back, because I don't need this central obesity. Now all my skirts fit again. Woo! Because I was like, I'm going to have to toss my wardrobe, or I'm going to have to go on metformin or GLP-1s, you know, like something. And I still personally do believe a little touch of metformin for our metabolism doesn't hurt. And the people that are trying to live to 100, 120, even if they're crazy skinny, are going on metformin. The only negative of metformin is if you have any kidney problems, or if you're an adult alcoholic, and not just like a, you know, once a day drink, but an alcoholic, which hopefully doesn't apply to most people.
Yeah. So you talked about peptides, you talked about GLP-1 agonist medications, and obviously they're so prolific now in society. What are you seeing there? Is that part of your questionnaire? I mean, because GLP-1 is a hormone, right? So how are you seeing that affecting women in menopause, or women with their birth control pills? Or are you seeing any data about that?
Well, the one concern with the GLP-1s is they decrease gastric emptying. And so if you're taking your birth control pill, then the absorption may not be as good, was their concern. But I think it's been okay. But if it does become a concern, then actually just a random weird tip is you can take your birth control pills intravaginally. And so you could put it that, so it's not affected by the GLP-1.
Seriously? Any birth control pill? You can insert it like a suppository.
Yes, exactly. The main thing to know is if you have a white panty and a blue pill, you might stain the panty. But just put it up there. That's like a whole new world right there. And that we give to people who are like, I can't take pills. And I'm like, the birth control pill is like this small. You really, like, if you can eat a grain of rice, you can take the birth control pill. Like, what do you mean you can't take pills?
It's but a psychosomatic thing though, isn't it?
Yeah, then stick it up your vagina.
Wow.
And then people are like, I can't stick things up my vagina. I was like, well, you're using this because you do stick things up your vagina.
So you would just insert it like you would a tampon.
Yeah, totally.
And you just need to get it far enough up there and it'll just disintegrate and absorb.
Exactly. Do it before you go to bed, so you have the 8 hours to dissolve, as opposed to upright, you know, fall out or something like that.
Yeah. So what's your dream for Pandia Health? How do you see it expanding? You talked earlier about the fact that you're going to be distributing condoms, for example.
Yes. Yes.
What about lubes? What about some other, you know, ancillary sort of things that can support our reproductive and sexual health?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, the more things we can sell, the better for our company. But we want to make sure that, you know, that we are 100% physician team. And then as long as this company holds my values, we will always tell you what's best for your health, even if it doesn't help our bottom line. And that we won't push anything that hasn't been shown to beat placebo in a randomized clinical trial. And so you'll see other people out there pushing compounded things for menopause. And anytime you compound something for menopause, compound something for acne, I can charge you. Ridiculous, because I just made up this new custom formula for you. But know that the FDA approved stuff that is not compounded works great. You don't really need this quote custom situation unless you really notice a difference when you do that. And so we definitely are interested in selling over-the-counter things such as vitamins, such as ibuprofen for painful menstrual cramps, you know, pads, anything to help you with your life, assuming that it's safe, that, you know, that we also like to favor female-founded, female-led companies or just companies that, you know, are female-focused. So definitely expanding there. But really right now, we're here to offer expertise in where your doctor doesn't have expertise. Again, they just surveyed a bunch of OB-GYNs, surveyed all the OB-GYN residency programs across the nation. And of the ones that answered, only 31% had some menopause curriculum, which means 69% of the OB-GYNs graduating in 2022 when they did the survey have no menopause training whatsoever.
That's extraordinary.
Not even internal medicine or family practice. And so on the policy side, and I think hopefully we can agree even under this administration, because this is about health and there is no party or whatever to this or politics, that we should ask that all physicians have 1 hour of menopause training every 5 to 10 years. Because doctors, we always have to do this thing called CME, continuing medical education. And each state has its own little favorite thing. So like California likes end of life. Florida likes opioids. Somebody else likes this. Is it too much to ask that all physicians, because menopause affects every cell from the top of your head to your toe, your eye, your armpit, you know, your bones, all sorts of stuff. And that doctor needs to know, hey, this could be menopause, or menopause could be affecting it. Just 1 hour every 5 to 10 years for general. And then for internal medicine, family practice, OB-GYN, 3 hours or maybe 5. I let them decide, but I don't think it's too much to ask. And it's really needed, because if it's not on your differential, they've shown on average, it takes 7 visits to figure out this is menopause. And it should be just, oh, you're 52, you lost your waist, your triglycerides went up and your vagina is itchy and scratchy and painful. Menopause.
Oh, gosh. It's just so important to be seeing someone who's been trained in menopause if you're, you know, over 50 specifically. So it's great to have all these resources that are emerging. You talked before about the current administration, the changes in policy with regards to women's health and access to reproductive services or reproductive safety. I find it very alarming, just as a private citizen, for somebody who has made it their mission to work in this field. What is it like to be working as a physician and be owning a company that's giving people access to these resources that a lot of people in the country think are abominable, or whatever words we might use, not acceptable?
Yeah.
What has that been like for you and will continue to be like for you in the coming years?
I think it's really critical to realize that this election was very close. It was only won by 1.8%, and that 30% of people didn't vote. And so the current president was not voted for by about 70% of the population. And so 70% of this country did not vote for this president. And then 48% voted not this president. So this president doesn't necessarily have a mandate, but also realize that when we survey people, what percentage want us to teach comprehensive sex ed in schools? 80%. But what is the reality? Who controls the school boards? Whoever runs for the school board. And so I'm busy going to work, doing my thing. I don't have time to run for the school board. But certain people who are stay at home can go run for these school boards and take it over with their ideology. So don't think that they are the majority. We are the majority who are like, this is a personal decision for your family to make with your body in conjunction with your religious leader in your way. That the majority of America believes in reproductive freedom, believes in bodily autonomy, believes that your body, your choice, your house, your religion, it's not my place to tell you what to do, to impose my religion on you. That is so un-American. And so we
absolutely
are the majority.
Absolutely. This country was founded on religious freedom.
Yes. They fled so they could practice their religion.
And they were fleeing persecution.
Yeah. We are not here to follow the president's religion. It is about freedom of religion, because my joke is if my mom were president, she's a Buddhist and we'd all have to be vegetarian. And then some Buddhism is like, you can't build a house because you're going to kill the worm and the ant. Like, that is your body, your house, your decision, but I'm going to build my house. You know what I mean? Like, I want my house and I want my hamburger. So it's your religion, your choice, but don't push on me. That's just so fundamental in America. And it is these fringe people that the Republican Party has been united with and feels they have to pay back. And I feel they've gone too far. It's horrifying to me that today the United States Senate confirmed RFK. He is an anti-vaxxer. He does not believe in vaccines. He thinks vaccines should be optional. And if you think that, then you are putting babies at danger, because babies don't have the immune system to get a vaccine. You are putting old people at danger, because they've shown when you give old people a vaccine, it doesn't take. And so even though they got the vaccine, it only takes 80% of the time versus 90%. So you want 1 in 5 grandma, grandpa to die? Do you want that baby that just came out that we worked so hard to bring into this world, grew it for 40 weeks in my tummy and then breastfeeding it, to die? And then all the people that are immunosuppressed, anybody that's on steroids for their asthma, for their rheumatoid arthritis, for their lupus, or just has cancer. Like, now I have cancer and now you're going to kill me because you're not willing to take a vaccine, because you're not willing to mask. It is a slap in the face of all healthcare workers that he was even nominated. And the fact that he got that position, I don't care that they put him in. I say take him out. He is incompetent, unqualified. He does interesting things with dyes and healthy food. But what we need in an epidemic with the avian flu, if America had not had the leadership we had, the entire world would have been. We came up with a coalition with the vaccine so quickly and saved so many people.
Oh, I agree. Look, science saves the world. Right, we see it in
too much to ask
so many parts
the
of our
head
lives.
Of health have some medical education, some scientific knowledge, but to have an anti-vaxxer is an affront to all health.
Which is
workers.
Someone that's not a scientist. Let's just start there. I mean, it's just fundamentally wrong. And
These
the attack on science and
are
the attack
about
on
nepotism.
The truth is.
Is about nepotism.
Is something that we need to be using our voices to combat, for sure. So I appreciate that advice to be really starting local and go for a spot on your school board. Be involved in the decision making in your community, at your schools, associations that are making decisions on behalf of your children. It's just so incredibly important, and we can make a difference by being part of the movement. So I close every episode with the same question. And I want to go back to the beginning of our conversation where you were talking about not trimming the branches of your tree of possibility. So for somebody that has a dream in their heart and doesn't feel like they have what it takes to make it happen at any age, what would you say to them?
I would say that find your community, that there are people here to support you. And if it's not your parents, then it can be your teacher, it can be your coach, it can be your religious leader, or you can reach out. That is the beauty of the internet. You can connect with almost everyone and lots of people via LinkedIn or via Facebook or via whatever. And my mom always said, if you don't ask, you don't get. And the worst that can happen if you ask and they say no, they say no. But if they say yes, wow, you've opened up the possibilities. And certainly I can't take on and mentor everybody in the world, but there is a mentor for you somewhere out there. There are a ton of people that are willing to help others that want to do good. I believe that the majority of people want to do good, that want to help other people. And it feels great to help people. And it feels flattering to be asked for advice, for help, to realize I have something that I can help someone else. So if you have no one, know that you can find someone. Hunt for that village, find that community on the internet. I love Reddit, or like just you can ask questions, you can get information until you find it. And that's what's the beauty of finding a significant other. This is your chosen family. This is someone who loves you, who supports you. And I've been so blessed to have a partner with me since I was 14. Thank goodness he got me through medical school, residency, wow. Two children, a startup. And it's just wonderful to have that partner. He's my greatest cheerleader. And it's just,
oh, what's his name?
Steve Coe.
Oh, love to you. Oh my goodness.
Picture,
I love that.
There.
Oh, I love that.
I have two daughters.
Oh, thank you so much for the way that you show up in the world and for what you are doing in America. It's so inspiring.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, such important information. I am so grateful that we have it now. So many takeaways. I mean, the big one is the importance of science and acknowledging that science evolves and our understanding of what's working and our bodies changes, and how critical it is to be working with doctors and practitioners who are working with the latest science and up-to-date information about treatment options. And if you're a woman over 40, seeing a doctor and practitioners who are trained in menopause. When Dr. Sophia said that old age is a euphemism for menopause, and that on average it takes about 7 visits to figure out that your symptoms are menopause related, and that has to change, because for those of us in perimenopause and menopause, it affects every cell in our bodies from the tops of our head to our toes and our bones. So we have to know what's going on with our bodies, and seeing practitioners who can help us figure that out. It was sobering to learn that 69% of OBGYNs in the United States have no menopause training. So just like we were talking about in the last episode with Melissa and Stacey from Hot Pause Health, the OBGYN that helped you deliver your babies and may have been an amazing experience may not be the practitioner who's going to help you navigate your menopause journey. And for younger women, the importance of early education about reproductive health, catching young girls early with good communication before they develop their habits to give them the best possible chance in life so they don't limit their choices with unwanted pregnancies. And the importance of local advocacy, that if you really want to make a difference, run for your local school board that's making these decisions about what girls are learning in school. It was really great to learn about what Pandia Health does and how it works and how easy and inexpensive, and if you have health insurance, free it is to access birth control and menopause care. I really enjoyed learning about the birth control options, learning that the rod implant is more effective than a vasectomy, and the hormonal IUD beats tubal ligation in effectiveness, and then to learn about the copper IUD, the shot, the ring patch pill, and the difference between the emergency contraceptive pill and the abortion pill. I think there's quite a bit of misinformation about that. And my goodness, the periods optional campaign, what a radical shift in how we think about menstruation, that you do not have to bleed every month, and that if you use the birth control pill, it can reduce the risk of ovarian cancer by 50%. Wow. I'm going to be telling every young woman I know about this option. And then for older women or younger women, if you are bleeding more than 5 to 7 days regularly, or using 3 to 5 pads or tampons per day regularly, go and see a doctor to make sure that you're not anemic and there aren't underlying issues causing that. was really interesting to learn about how to use birth control effectively during perimenopause to reduce menopause symptoms and transition with ease, and really great for Dr. Sophia to debunk some of the myths and the disinformation about the safety of hormone replacement and the difference between synthetic progesterone and bioidentical micronized progesterone, and that the way that we administer some of these hormones now has changed over the years. And also to learn about the safety of vaginal estrogen, even for women who've had breast cancer, that it doesn't absorb systemically in the same way as the other estrogen. And very interesting to learn about the effect of GLP-1 agonist injections and how that's affecting women and their ability to absorb contraceptive pills, and that you can take it vaginally like a suppository. I mean, incredible. Aside from all the information about birth control and menopause care, I really, really love the work that Dr. Sophia is doing to empower women, in particularly young women. It was really interesting what she was saying about young women trimming their trees of possibility, and that it can happen as young as the third grade. I mean, I think it really helps to have role models at any age. You know, when she said, if you can see it, you're more likely to believe that you can be it. And for people of all ages, that growth mindset, not getting into a fixed mindset about what you can be and what you can achieve, that if you can believe it, it can be done. You know, so finding those mentors, finding community, reaching out for help. And the worst thing that can happen is somebody says no, but if they say yes, then wow, it's just opened up a whole lot more opportunities for you. So there is a mentor out there somewhere for you. I loved when she said that. So definitely tell me in the Facebook group what resonated with you from this episode, and please leave a review. I'd love to hear what you think.
I want to hear about your It Has To Be Me story. So head on over to ithastobeme.com/stories to share it in our free community. You can also join the conversations we're having about this episode and others. I'm Tess Masters. Join me next week and we'll dive inside another great story to help us go from dreaming to doing.